My education began at a traditional American institution, an old farmhouse out on Bell Road in the southeastern corner of Kendall County, Illinois. And my teachers were no less than local superheroes, Mom and Dad. On our three-acre plot, they were legendary for their ability to pull fresh turnips out of black garden soil, steaming loaves of bread from previously empty ovens, hand-sewn garments out of thin air, gravel from barked-up knees, and even smiles from tear-strewn faces. Mind you, they performed these feats of excellence whilst juggling two daughters, one regular son, and one exceptional son. One of the most exceptional smartasses, that is, that the Tri-County area had ever known. One of my absolute favorite series of novels was the Little House books of Laura Ingalls Wilder, in no small part because they reminded me so much of my own parents' resourcefulness. When these Bell Road super friends found the household wanting some necessary implement or accessory, they taught my siblings and me that there was a quicker and cheaper way to acquire things than shopping for them. One could make things. "Dad, where'd that grape arbor come from?" "I built it." "Get out of here." "Okay, son, but I did." "Well, sweet Peter, Paul, and Mary, can I do that?" My dad was always building something, it seemed to me, when he wasn't planting garlic or skunking us in a game of horse. So it would have stood to reason that he grew up amongst carpenters of yore, raising barns before lunch and then installing staircases after. In fact, I later learned that he taught himself to build furniture by simply doing. For example, when my mother wanted a new bookshelf to hold reference books and photo albums, he just copied an antique oak china closet that was in a corner of the dining room. My mom has pointed out, though, that the first thing he built was born from a parenting need. I was the first son, therefore I was the first initiate in the household who needed training in the field of, technically speaking, peeing standing up. I had the inclination right, and my jaunty stance was satisfactory, not to mention my acumen for judging the wind trajectory. But still, faced with the modern lavatories of the early 1970s, there was the serious obstacle that I was too damn short. Undaunted, my dad built me a little wooden step from which I could show off my skills to any spectator interested in the fine arts of arc and stream. I grew up learning the use of tools from him, mainly, as well as from my uncles and grandfathers. But I want to come clean here and point out that I wasn't very good at it. They were generous and patient teachers, and so they would watch me attempt to swallow the digestible effects of their tutelage until they were satisfied I could merely use the given tool without injuring myself or the object I was fixing. For so many years, I would whack a nail with all my might, only for them to admonish me with a shouted, "Hit it!" Then they would stand, hands on hips, and wait for goodness knows what, as though I were about to be able to magically hit the nail harder because of the clarity of their instruction. Oh, hit it! Okay, I didn't realize when I was hitting it just now that I was supposed to hit it. The thing is, however, I don't think young people are supposed to be all that good at work. Sure, there are some exceptions to the rule— egg suckers, brown nosers, and the like. But most of us kids were too busy thinking about fishing or baseball or Paula Abdul, or huffing glue and WD-40 for the future gourmands. The important thing was that they stuck by me in their teaching, despite our apparent differences in interpretation of the verb to hit. From their fidelity, I eventually gained a work ethic, by which I understood that if I kept trying to succeed at changing that truck tire, or mending those fence boards, or hitting that son of a biscuit nail, I eventually would succeed, and then, with further effort, I would succeed even more better than I had the last time. I would sink a nail with one easy hammer swing, finally, but by then they would not praise me. They would have resumed their own work because I no longer needed chiding. I could now be trusted to drive a nail without supervision, which was better than any compliment. By the time I started theater school at age 17, I'd become pretty darn medium with a hammer. I'd give my swing a 7 out of 10, maybe an 8, right after breakfast. I had worked a summer framing houses and also had done a lot of carpentry around our place with my dad, so I could hammer a nail with a decent confidence that I wouldn't leave more than one or two elephant tracks. But I was still young, a couple years away from filling out to my full strength, so I was a bit cautious when asked to hammer together some 2x4s in theater shop class. When I successfully, albeit slowly, buried some 16-penny sinkers into a floor platform's frame, I noticed the other kids in my class just staring at me with abject wonder. "How can you do that?" one ventured. "Huh. Interesting." On the framing crew, I was a kid laborer who was learning to swing his persuader like a grown-up, but in this classroom, I guess I was a veritable Thor. I ended up working in that estimable scenery shop for wages during my tenure of study at the University of Illinois, and my lifelong love of the wood shop was born. The man in charge, Ken Egan, ran a very tight ship, and among his lessons was the importance of keeping one's shop clean, organized, and tidy. They were producing a rolling repertory schedule of scenery for the three theaters in the building, so efficiency had to reign supreme. It was my first run-in with shop safety as well, learning the proper equipment and techniques to use around the massive milling machines and the treacherous table saw.